Now we're holding on page 124 in Tinus, the beginning of the third pack of Seder Tinus, middle of Os Mendes. I guess it must be the beginning of Os Mendes because we have Mem Aleph in here and I don't see a Mendes, whatever. So the Perek talks about, the previous Perek talked about the Seder of the fasts and the tefillos on the fasts and various other details about fasts for rain. Our Perek begins by talking about, you have various cases where, like this for rain, we're saying you go through a gradual escalation of the Tanya. You're supposed to have 3 minor fasts, then 3 that are more severe, and then 7 that are the most severe of all. But then the Mishnah describes various cases where you don't do that. You jump straight away to the most severe fasts because there's a tzara. So there's a whole bunch of Mishnayos that talk about various details, and it mentions Maisa Sheyodu Skenim Yerushalayim La'orehem. It happened once that the Skenim went down from Yerushalayim to their cities. The Skenim, the Chachamim of the Sanhedrin, lived in various places in Eretz Yisrael. So here they would gather in the Lishkas Hagozis to teach Torah and to judge certain kinds of cases and so on and so forth, but then now they're returning to their cities, and the purpose of their going was actually the Gozritinus. They declared a fast, meaning, in other words, if they had stayed in the Lushkas HaGozis and sent out messages, not everybody would get them in time, so they themselves went to the cities to inform the people that we have to have a fast. Al Shinira Kim Loi Pitano Shidofin, because they had seen Shidofin, which is a disease that involves where a kind of windstorm or something where the stalks of grain get battered and the grain falls out of them and all you have left is an empty stalk. So there had been seen in Ashkelon, in the city of Ashkelon, which Rashi points out is part of the land of the Plishtim, so it wasn't even a particularly Jewish city, but nevertheless in Eretz Yisrael, and they saw that there had been shidufin there, only kimloi pitan, or only the amount that would fill up the mouth of an oven. The Gemara later on discusses what does that mean. Does it mean enough grain that would fill up the opening of the oven, or does it mean enough grain to bake a loaf of bread that would fill it up? Whatever. It was a very small amount, but nevertheless, they consider that serious enough to declare a fast, to have everybody start fasting and davening. Habonya points out, actually, you learn a powerful lesson in Avodah from this. Don't wait until the disaster hits and then start davening to the Eibishter. In fact, the Gemara elsewhere says a person should always yachtin tefillah l'tzara, start davening before the tzara comes. Be proactive about it. You don't even have to wait for the tzara. Daven to begin with, that the Eibishter should protect you, as we say in Tefillah Sederach, for example, mikol peronius hamisrag shesavoris la'olam. So the same way, as soon as the Chachamim had heard, there's this tiny amount of shidofen, and you would say, big deal, it's one oven mouthful, but nevertheless, they realize this is serious business. The Eibishter is giving up an early warning, and therefore we better fast and daven and do tshuva and so forth, and ask Hashem not to make it worse. For that matter, also, you have a concept in Torah when you see troubles that affect other people. In particular, there are actually psukim that mention when you see troubles affecting the goyim, it's meant as a lesson for us. There's psukim in the Navi Tzfanya that say as much, where Hashem says, I've brought all kinds of devastation and disasters and whatever on the goyim, and I expected that you Jewish people should look at that and then take musar from it and realize that the power of the Eibishter and do tshuva. So the idea is that the Gemara mentions this someplace in Yevamos as well. So here it's a similar idea. You're seeing even the smallest amount of disaster, and like Rashi's saying, it's only in Eretz Plishtim, it's not even in Eretz Yisrael proper, but realize, take a lesson from it and realize this is the kind of thing to dive into the Eibishter. Well, Ashkelon is Eretz Plishtim. It was one of the 5 main cities of the Plishtim in the times of Tanakh. In the Gemara's times, it was basically the border of the Jewishly settled area of Eretz Yisrael. The Gemara thus, for example, the Mishnah in Gittin mentions that beyond Ashkelon is considered Chutz La'aretz, and you have the dinim where you have to say b'fanei nichta, b'fanei nechta when you bring a get there. But it's considered Chutz La'aretz for that purpose. So here we're saying it wasn't even a particularly Jewish city. There were Pashtus Jews who lived there, but it wasn't especially a Jewish city. And nevertheless, the Chachamim, as soon as they saw that happened, they're right away having everybody fast and do tshuva and so forth, rather than waiting for it to get worse. Continues the mission of Oy Gozru Tainis. Another time, the Chachamim declared a Tainis al Sha'ochul. The point is that earlier in the Mishnah, it discussed various disasters that you declare fasts for. Among them is Shidofen, is this disease of the grain. And another one is when there are wild animals attacking. So of Oy Gozru Tainis, another time, they declared a Tainis al Sha'ochul Zeaven, Beis Tinoikis, Be'er HaYarden, because wolves had eaten two small children in Be'er HaYarden. And Rashi points out that earlier in the Mishnah, it mentions a concept called Makom Mahaleches, a disaster that can easily travel from one place to another. Well, here you have, the wolves can easily migrate from one place to another. Therefore, if they're getting vicious enough that in Be'er HaYarden, even though it's not in Eretz Yisrael proper, they're already up to the point of eating small children, then it's also a tzara that they have to fast all over Eretz Yisrael and daven for that such things shouldn't happen in their area. Rabbi Yossi Omer, lo al sha'ochu, el al shenu. Rabbi Yossi says it wasn't even that the wolves ate children, it was only that they were seen in populated areas, which itself is unusual enough that wolves should invade areas where people live. It's machlokas haposkim, is Rabbi Yossi actually arguing with the Tanakhama and saying just the fact that wolves are seen is enough reason to declare a fast, or is he just saying, Maisa Shahoya Kahoya? You're saying the story was that they ate them, I'm saying the story was that they were seen. Anyway, continues the Mishnah, Al Ilu Masriyin Bashavas. You're allowed to be Masriyin for the following on Shabbos. Now, Masriyin, on the face of it, means to blow the shofar. On the other hand, Rashi learns Udiu and Masechta that what it actually means is to say the tefillah, Anenu, Hashem, Anenu, Anenu, Avinu, Anenu, like we say at the end of Slichas. So normally we don't ask for such things on Shabbos, but for the following disasters that the Mishnah is going to describe, you're allowed to say this tefillah on Shabbos, Al Irshi Kifur Ojik Chavim, a city that was besieged by Goyim, or a city that's threatened by a river which is going to flood, or because of a ship that's being tossed around in the ocean and it's in danger of sinking. So you yourself are not in that city. You yourself are not on that ship, but nevertheless, you know that there are other Jews in Sarah, then therefore that's a valid reason to be saying the tefillah Anenu, Anenu, Hashem Anenu, even on Shabbos. Rabbi Yossi said, no, you can be calling out and doing things like that and alluding to help the people, in other words, not to daven to Hashem, but when you're calling together people to go and help, that you can gather together a band of people who will go rescue that besieged city, who will be able to save people from the flood, etc. But not when you're only doing it in order to cry out to Hashem, because Rashi explains earlier in the Masechta, Rabbi Yossi takes the view, we shouldn't be so certain that Hashem is going to accept our tefillahs that we should override the menucha of Shabbos for that purpose. So it's one thing you're doing it, like Hatzalah, they go and override Shabbos for the Kruach Nefesh, that's valid, but just to go and cry out to Hashem and say, Anenu Hashem, Anenu Hashem, Anenu, Rabbi Yossi says that's not reason enough to do it for these kinds of things. Shimon HaTimni Omer, Afal HaDever, Shimon HaTimni says another thing that you would say Anenu for on Shabbos is also for Dever, also for an epidemic. The Chacham didn't agree with him for that, that that's the kind of thing to say Anenu for on Shabbos. Okay. The Mishnah had also mentioned earlier that another example where they start with the most serious fast kind of right away and start by saying Anenu and so forth, the Mishnah had such a poskug shamim ben geshem legeshem mem yoim, when there was a 40-day break between one rainfall and another. Meaning, Udi in the Masechta was talking about where the rains didn't fall in time. The rains are supposed to fall in Cheshvan and Udi Kislev, and then off and on there throughout the winter, and they never fell at the beginning of the season, and therefore you have the series of fasts. Here we're talking about there was rain, but you need rain on an ongoing basis throughout the winter season, and here you had a 40-day period after, so what happened? The earlier rains fell, the seeds in the ground started sprouting, and now you have this 40-day break, and now we're in danger that the seeds are going to dry up, which is in a way worse than if the rain hadn't fallen to begin with. Okay, the seeds are sitting there in the ground, nothing's happened to them yet, they haven't started germinating. Eventually, when rain falls, then they'll start developing. You have a problem. They already started developing. They already grew shoots and all. And now they're going to now there's no rain. The result is they're going to dry up and you're going to be worse off. So therefore, so the Mishnah says, Masriyin Alein. So right away you cry out to Hashem for them and you start with the serious fast. And you say, Anenu, Mipnei Shei Makas Batsoras. Because this is a plague of Batsoras, which means a drought. So, my Makas Batsoras, for Holos of the Gemara, starts discussing what the difference between Makas Batsoras and a regular lack of rain. Makas Batsoras, the implication is something that's more serious, so how exactly do we define the difference? So, Amar Rav Chanina, Sa'ob Sela Ushchicha. Suppose you have like this. The normal price of wheat in those days was usually you could buy 4 saw of wheat for 1 sela. So, prices have gone up 4 times as much. There's inflation. And now it takes a seller to buy 1 saw, or shchicha, but at least there's grain available. It's higher price than normal for whatever reason, but there's the, but you can find it available at that price, but certa. Then we call that a makas bat service. That would be, it's called a drought. It's not an absolute emergency because there is food available, it just costs more. Dalad v'lishticha, but if the prices are normal, four star to the seller, but there's no grain available, hafna, then that's called a famine, and that warrants more serious measures as far as fasting and tefillahs and so forth. And the Gemara
continues.
So that's what we're saying. The second case is where you have the normal price. It is four star to the seller, but there's no grain available at that price.
Grain. Price going down.
Sometimes, but not always. Maybe the prices haven't adjusted yet to that, or maybe, I don't know, whatever it is. The point is, we're not saying it's, what? I don't know, Ness. No, it's just maybe the merchants haven't adjusted their prices yet or something. I don't know. Whatever. And furthermore, Rabbi Yochanan says, this is only talking about where money is cheap, meaning money is available. People are able to make a living. People are able to earn money. Or peiros v'yoker, but the peiros, the produce is more expensive than normal. So then we're saying it's called a batsotas. It's a serious situation, but it's not an emergency. Avo mois v'yoker, but if money is hard to come by, because there's a depression, everybody's out of a job and nobody's able to make money, or payers bezoil, even though the payers are very cheap, masrin alem yad, then you start crying out with anenu right away for that. Because that's an emergency. In other words, there's plenty of food. Like, for example, think of like during the Great Depression, food was available to be had, and it was often very cheap, but nobody had a job, so nobody could afford it. So that's what Rabbi Yochanan is saying. That kind of thing counts as a real emergency, as opposed to the other way around, where people are able to earn a living, but there's inflation, prices are higher than normal. That's not as much of an emergency. The Omer of Yochanan, as in fact Rabbi Yochanan says, Nehuna, I remember, had Havukaimi Dalag Sin the seller, when four saw was going for a seller, which is a normal price, but people were not able to earn a living, but have an official nefiche kofon b'Tveria. In Tveria, there were many people who were swollen from hunger mid the less iser, because there wasn't even an iser, that nobody could earn even an iser, which is a small coin. So therefore, what good does it do? There's plenty of food available in the stores, but nobody can afford to buy it. So that's what Rabbi Yochanan said. There you have an example. People's bellies were swollen with hunger. So that's an example. So that kind of thing counts as a real emergency, and therefore masriyan right away. So the Gemara continues. Tanya, Omer Rav Elazar ben Parta, inflation is not as much of an emergency as a depression, basically, we're saying, yeah. So Tanya, Omer Rav Elazar ben Parta, miyom shechora beis mikdash. Ever since the beis mikdash has been destroyed, nasug shomim simukin la'olam. The grain has become simukin for the world. Now, what is simukin? Rashi explains that it means that rain falls like only grudgingly, like Hashem gives it almost like only like a little bit here, a little bit there. Meloshim b'shadayim tzomkim, the word samach means to shrivel up. So like the rains have shriveled up and they're not given as generously as they were before. The Aruch has a different girsa. The Aruch has a girsa over here, not simukin, but skimiyon. And what does that mean? So the Aruch Hashalim explains that that's related to the word scheme in English. The word scheme ultimately comes from a root that means a plan. So it means Hashem uses the rain to execute his plans in the world, meaning that Hashem uses the rain as a simon whether the Jewish people are acting right. In the time of the Beis Mikdash, you had other simonim for it. For example, you had the white strip of wool over there by the Sari La'azazel would turn white, and the Ner Ma'arovi of the menorah would stay lit all night. We learned about that in Masechet Yoma. But after the Beis Mikdash is destroyed, when those simonim are not available anymore, then Hashem uses the rain as a skimion, as a method, a deter of showing how the people are faring as far as their mice.
This is much more fit with the continuation.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it works according to Rashi as well, because simukin means, in other words, it's like shriveled up. Sometimes you have a lot, but many times you have only a little. So yeah. Yes, so some years you have a lot of rain, and then you have a different year when there's very little rain. Yes, some years the rain falls in its proper time, beginning Cheshvan and Kislev time, and then there are other years where it doesn't fall in the right time. You want to know what the difference is. Now, ultimately, you might say, what's the difference? Ultimately, we're getting enough rain for the year. The plants are growing. What's the difference whether it comes bismanim or not? So Rav Elazar and Parter explains, when the rain falls in its proper times, what is that like? Like a slave whose master gives him his what he's going to live off of for the whole week on Sunday. So he has plenty of time to prepare his dough properly and to eat it properly. He's not in a rush because he has the whole week. Every day he's able to make the food properly. What about in a year when the rain doesn't fall in the proper time? What's that like? He gives him his what he's going to live off of only on Erev Shabbos. So now he has to be in a rush. So everything is in a rush. He has to hurry up and make the dough, and it doesn't come out as good. And he eats it, and it's not such good bread. So the same way, when the rain is delayed in a year, it means there's less time for the grain to grow, or it grows later in the year, and therefore it's harder on people. There's a certain time of year when people are expecting there should be plenty of grain, and then at that point there are shortages because it's not ripe yet. Or maybe even they have to harvest it when it's not quite ripe yet, and it's not really so nutritious, etc. Another way of looking at it, also, when there's plenty of rain during the year, what is it like? The master gives the slave his parnasa, what he's going to live off of, all at once. Now, consider, for example, he gives them a bunch of wheat. So what do you do with wheat? You grind it. Now, when you grind grain with millstones, inevitably some of it sticks to the millstones. But how much is going to stick? It's not proportional to the amount of grain you're grinding. There's only so much that's going to stick. And then afterwards, eventually, all the holes get filled up, and whenever it's not, no more is going to stick. So therefore, nimtzu rechayim tochnes min akor, mashe techenes min akav. So it comes out, the millstones, they end up grinding and taking out from what you're grinding as much from a kur as they would from a calf. There's 180 kavim in a kur. So when he gives him an entire kur at once and he goes and grinds it, relative to the kur, very little is going to be lost. A certain amount is going to stick to the millstones and is going to be lost, but very little compared to the kur as a whole. As opposed to if you had to do one kav at a time, then every time a lot is being lost to the millstones. Similarly, the nimtza isa chelus min akur, k'moshe chelus min akav, and the same way when it comes to kneading the dough, you put the dough in a tray or a trough or a bowl or something like that, and you mix it. Same idea. Some of it ends up sticking to the bowl. But again, it's not going to be proportional to the amount of dough. It's going to be proportional to how much the bowl itself is going to end up sticking to. So therefore, if you're doing a larger amount at a time, you're losing out less. So therefore, So it winds out of the entire kur, you're losing only as much as you would have out of one cab. So in other words, you end up way ahead. My shop brings slightly different gear. So it's over here, the gear that we have in here in the Gemara is Rechayim Tuchnen Minakur, meaning that when you're grinding it, meaning it was exactly that, you have a little bit that ends up getting stuck to the millstones. It brings a different gusa that the word is supposed to be oichelos, that the millstones eat up and consume a certain amount of the grain. It amounts to the same thing either way. What about when there's a year with very little rain? The master gives the slave his parnasa only a little bit at a time. So now you have the opposite. Every time he's milling, he's losing a certain amount to the millstones, and over the 180 kavim that make up one kur, he's losing a large amount because every individual time, some of it ends up sticking. And when it comes to kneading in the trough, the same thing. What gets lost by getting stuck to the trough is from each individual cab is as much as it would have from an entire crew. So he ends up losing out proportionately a great deal more. So the same way, when the rain comes a little here, a little there throughout the year, then you're not gaining the grain is not developing as well as it should, and you end up, even though you're going to have a harvest at the end, but the grain is going to be of much poorer quality. You're going to get much less nutrition out of it. Yeah, davar acha, another way of looking at it, bizman shekhamei merubin l'mahu doimeh, when there's plenty of rain in a year, what is it like? La'odim shemagabal satit, like when a person is kneading clay, when a person takes clay and kneads it to make earthenware. Im yesh oimer, to make bricks or whatever. Im yesh le mayim rab, if he has lots of water to work with, mayim enem kolim, he doesn't use up the water, va'atik megubo yapa, and the clay gets very well kneaded and mixed. Im yesh le mayim watin, if he has very little water, mayim kolim, then the water gets used up, va'atik enem esgabo yapa, and he's not able to knead the clay thoroughly because he doesn't have enough water to work. So the same way, when there's little rain during the year, we don't have enough water to work with, and therefore there's problems. People may not be dying of thirst or whatever, but they're still having a harder time in it. So again, the idea would be, in other words, first of all, to realize that that's one of the things we lost when the Beis Mikdash was destroyed. And another point is, so always, even if you have rain a particular year, is not to be satisfied, okay, at least we have rain, it's not such an emergency, but to realize that there's still what to daven to the Eibishter, there should be plenty of it, and you should have the good things. So the Gemara tells, Tanan Rabbanan, Pamachas Olu Kol Yisrael L'Regel Yerushalayim, one time during the time, late in the time of the second Beis Mikdash, by this point, the Romans were already ruling over the Jewish people. So all the Jewish people had come on Aliyah L'Regel, V'loyah Ha'olahem Mayim Lishtes. They didn't have enough water to drink. They need to keep in mind, they needed it for themselves, they needed it for their animals that they're bringing as korbanos. So there was a shortage. Holach Nachdimin ben Gurion. So Nachdimin ben Gurion, who was one of the famous rich people of Yerushalayim at that time. He's mentioned also in the Gemara in Gittin in the Agadah about the Churban. He's mentioned in a story in the Gemara of Ksubas. And he was one of the very rich people of Yerushalayim at that time. So he went Etzel Hegmon Echad. He went to a particular Hegmon, a Goyish nobleman, Shehoyasham, who lived over there. Amalai tells him, how veni yud beis nayonis mayim la'ulir regalim, lend me 12 springs of water for the ulir regal. Why 12? Marsha points out, because he was going to be samech on the schus of the Jewish people, made up of 12 shvatim. Vani etim l'cha yud beis nayonis mayim, I will return you 12 springs of water. Now Rashi explains, normally,
he's asking what is going to be effect.
Now Rashi explains like this. Normally, springs keep on welling up water from the ground. So why would Nachdimin Ben Gurion have to promise anything? The springs will naturally refill, and that's that. The point is, Rashi says these springs were very slow springs. So they wouldn't fill up at the rate, like this, people are going to be taking out a lot of water from them for themselves and their animals and whatever. They wouldn't replenish fast enough. So therefore, Nachdimin is saying, by the time it comes a certain deadline, I will either they will be refilled by the rain, because between the water that slowly trickles into them from underground, plus the rain that comes from above, between that, it'll be filled up, and then good, you'll have all your water supply back by a certain date, the imlab, and if not, then he offers him, then I will give you 12 kikar of silver, which is an enormous amount of money. The 12 also, Marsha says, he figured if the Eibishter if the schus of the Jewish people doesn't help, that Hashem should bring rain, then okay, the 12 kikar kesef will be like a pidyon nefesh. It'll be it'll be tzedakah, it'll be a kapara on behalf of the 12 shvatim. Then Yehoyada also makes an interesting point over here, that the fact that it was silver and not gold is very significant. We know the Zoya mentioned, Al-Pi Kabbalah, the Alter Rebbe mentions it in a couple of places in Tanya, and it's mentioned in Kutei Torah and in other places, silver represents chesed, gold represents and av, gold represents gvura and yira. In this case, the Eibishter Davka put it in his head that to offer to the Goy, and the Goy accepted silver, so that there should be chesed of the Eibishter evoked in this story over here. So, he made up a time by which he has to either that the springs will be refilled or that he's going to pay him the money. The deadline came, the day came, and the rain hadn't fallen yet. The shachas shalach loy, right, first thing that morning, the goy sends to Nachdimin a message. Shagli oimayim oimoyim, she yeshli biyadcha. Either give me the water or give me the money, which you owe me. Nachdimin says, don't you worry, I still have time in the day, don't be in such a rush. What's going on over here? Marsha mentions an interesting point. The Goyim consider the night following the day. So nowadays we have that the midnight is considered to be in secular, and then in secular society is the deadline, because the dividing line between one day and the other. Maybe it was midnight, maybe it was morning, whatever. The point is, the Goy took that view. Whereas we know it's the other way around. So, the goy figures in that case. Well, then in that case, then the goy figures ad v'loy ad b'chlal. If we said the deadline is such and such a day, it means that day, that the deadline is before that day begins. Therefore, first thing in the morning, he's already demanding his water because he's saying the deadline's already over. Meanwhile, Machdim is telling him, we Jews have yom ha'lachach ha'alayla. Last night began, and it's ad b'chlal. Last night began the last 24 hour period of the that I have to pay you back. We're only a part way through it yet, so I still have plenty of time. So he says sholach lo. So he sent back to him. Adayin yotzi shoros b'yom. I have plenty of time in the day. V'chein b'tzoraim. The same thing. The goy's messenger came back in the middle of the day, and Nachdimin gave him the same answer. Why did he send him back in the middle of the day? Maharsho explains that the goy figures, okay, so we have a suffix over here. Does this day belong to the period that you still have to pay me back or not? Well, very well then, chokin, so we'll divide it. Half for me, half for you. Well, then it's come the middle of the day, and you haven't paid up yet, so therefore, we'll say the suffix that you already own. But Nachdimin says, no, there's no suffix over here. I'm certain that today is still part of it, and therefore I still have time. V'chein b'mincha, comes mincha time already, the day is almost over, and he sends him a message again, and again he sends him back, and sholach loy, he sends him, shagli oymai maymois, give me the water or the money, sholach loy, and Nachdimin tells him, adayin yeshli shoros b'yom, I still have time in the day. I still have the entire day. It may be mincha time. It's true, it's very little time in the day left for rain to fall. Nevertheless, the Eivishter can make it happen. Liglaglov Olav Oise Hegman. At that point, this Goyish nobleman starts laughing at Nachdim. Omar Efshe, he says, Efshe Kolashana Kula Layoda's son. He thinks the entire day, the entire year, rain hasn't fallen. The Ash of Yodu Shamim, and all of a sudden now, this short amount of time between now and the end of the day. I don't know who's making noise back there, but please don't. The Liglaglovos Hegman, oh my, Efshikalashana Kula, the Yoduk Shum, the actual Yoduk Shumim. What does he think all of a sudden in these last few minutes of the day, rain's gonna fall? Miyad Nichnas the base of Merchus the Simcha. So he went into the bathhouse, the Simcha, which Marisha says that was part of his Liglug, that was part of his making fun. You Jews were short of water, and here pretty soon Nachdimon's gonna have to give me a fortune for my water. Meanwhile, I've got so much water, I can even go to the bathhouse and bathe in it. So Adjo's over Oicha Hegman, or Adjo Oisa Hegman Nymphas, for some crossed Vesamelchas, while that Hegman was in the bathhouse, or while he's going very happily into the bathhouse, Nichnas Nachdimon ben Gurion of Esmikdash Ku Otsiv. Nachdimon ben Gurion went into the Esmikdash very upset. Vinisatif, now he wasn't upset about that he's losing money, he's upset about the fact that it's going to be a chilul Hashem, that the goy is going to think that Hashem doesn't listen to the Jewish people. Vinisatif, for Omer v'tfila, and then he wrapped himself up and stood down. For Omer l'fanav, he says, Ribbono shel Olam, goliv yadua l'fanecha, it's revealed and well known before you, shelo l'chavod yasisi, I didn't do all of this for my covered, shelo l'chavod beis abba, see, I didn't do it for the honor of my father's household, that everybody should say, look what a big baal tzedakah, and so forth, Nachdimon is. I did it for your covered, today should your mind, mitzuri, na ole regalim, so that there should be lots of water for the ole regal. So therefore, please answer my tefillah. Miyad olu ovim, right away clouds came up, the yodu lahem shovim, and rain started falling, adshu umleis kolam mayonis, until all the springs were full, including these 12 springs that belong to the sky. By the way, Akosev learns a little differently. Rashi had said they were very slow flowing springs. Akosev says they were pools of water that were filled from the springs. So he called them mayonis because they come, the source of the water comes from springs, but they themselves are pools of water. And the point is, again, they would get drained faster than they get refilled. But now, with the rain falling, now they're full, now they're plentiful. Vahisiru, and they're even fuller than they were when the whole thing started. Yotza oise hegmim and amerchot. So now the goy comes out from the bathhouse and he sees that it's raining. Benachdimin ben Gurion yotz in Beis Mikdash. Meanwhile, Nachdimin ben Gurion is leaving the Beis Mikdash. Shepogu zevazeh. When they met one another, Omaleis, and Nachdimin tells him almost as a joke, Temli dmei mayim yosef sheyesh liyotza. You know what? You owe me extra now for the extra water that you have. Now, of course, there was no such deal, but Marishal says he's paying back the goy in his own coin. You're making fun of me that we had no water. Now, if anything, joke's on you, because now, if anything, really, if you were going to be fair about it, you owe me actually extra now for this extra water. Amalei, but the goy says, Yedeyani shalakecha lehirshas ha'olam ala b'shvilcha. I know that your God only made the whole world noisy and stirred up the whole world and brought this rainstorm only because of you. Ela adayin yeshli pischen pe'alecha. Nevertheless, the goy says, I still have an excuse against you. Sha'utzimim chama oisai. That I'm going to get my money from you after all. Shekvah shokha chama. The sun has already set. Umayim b'rishusi yodu. At this point, when the rain fell, it was in my rishus. The deadline passed. You didn't come up with it, so therefore, it's too late already. In fact, he says, really, Baushar continues with this logic about the night and the day, respectively, that manafshech. If we're gonna say like we goyim do, he says that the night follows the day, well then it already ended last night. And if you're gonna say like you Jews say hayoyim alachach alayla, it's still too late. So no matter what, you owe me the money. Nachdimin ben Gurion went back into the Besmikdash. When he's active, he wrapped himself up, and he stood to daven again. He says, show that you have beloved ones in the world. Meaning, just like Marsha said, you did a nest for me the first time, so also do a second nest for me also. And why would that second one show a greater ava? Because again, the first time it's a nest that the goy is claiming that's already birshusoy, and therefore he's not losing the money. Now do me a nest that the sun will shine and it will show that it was actually birshusi, that it was in my rishus, that it was still during my time that the rain fell, and therefore that the goy has no further claim against me. So just as you did me a nest the first time, do me another nest. Miyad noshva ruach, right away the wind blew, v'nispazua of him, the clouds cleared, v'zorcha achana, and the sun shone. So it wasn't that actually the sun had set. What it was is that the goy had thought that the sun had set. Now Hashem made the sun stand still, that he thought, enough time had passed, the sun had set. Meanwhile, Hashem made the sun stand still, so now it peeked through the clouds, and you could see that it was day. Oma Oisa Hegma, and so that goyish ruler says, Umolish Noktachama, if not for the sun piercing through the clouds, Hoyle Piskan Pe'alach, I still would have had a valid argument against you, Sha'utsinu Chasma Oisai, that I would have gotten my money. But now he realizes, you know what, I've been beaten at my own game. Tona, so we learn in a Braisa, Loinach Dimon Shmoi, really the Yid in the story, his real name was not Nakdim. Elabuni Shmoy. His real name was Buni, which it's a name that was used in those times. We find other characters in the Gemara mentioned that have that name as well. The Lomanikra Shmoy Nakdiman Shinokda or Shinikdira Kamababura. Shinokda would mean that the sun shone. Nikdira means that it pierced through. So Rashi says that either way it means that it was shining. Tosfos brings that Nikdara can mean that it pierced through, and there's yet another Gius, a Nikdama, which maybe fits better with the word Nakdimoin, which means that the sun stayed further towards the east than it should have. The sun sets in the west, so when it stayed in the sky, it means it was staying more toward the east, more towards Kedem than it otherwise would. Anyway, Bavura in his source, and therefore he was called Nakdimoin in token of that ness. So that's why Rashi points out that the ness is not so much that the clouds cleared. The ness was that the sun stood still where it didn't continue setting. Of course, it brings over here from different details about that. Does it mean that the sun actually stood still, or does it mean that it moved slower? Does it mean that maybe that the sun moved slower than normal? And therefore, he says another possibility also actually is, after all, if the sun were really to stand still and the earth were really to stand still, it would throw everything into confusion. It would, the whole world couldn't continue to exist without things running normally. What it may mean, in other words, is that the sun actually moved, but Hashem made the rays of the sun continue to be refracted in the direction as though the sun was there. So the sun had truly set, but Hashem caused the rays of light to bend in such a way that it looked as though the sun was still above the horizon. And the Gemara brings in this connection, Tana Rabbanan, Shloisha Nokta or Niktam Olahem Chama, there are three people in history for whom this ness happened, that the sun pierced through, or shone through, or stayed in the sky towards the east early for them. The Elohein, Moshe v'Yeshua v'Nakdimin Ben-Gurion. Nakdimin Ben-Gurion Hodam Moran. And then there's a different Girsa, the Shlema Nakdimin Ben Gurion Gemara, that Nakdimin Ben Gurion, okay, we know it from the story that the Gemara tells us, Yeshua Nami Krok Dichtiv Fuller, Yeshua we know Dichtiv, because the Pasuk tells us when he was fighting against the Goyim or come to attack Givon, the Pasuk says, Vayidem Hashemesh V'yareach Amad, the sun stood still and the moon stopped. El Moshe Menolam, where do we know that by Moshe the sun stood still? By the way, Tosfos brings up the point. There are other examples. You also have that by Yaakov that the sun set early. Okay? Or no, by Yaakov actually the sun rose early by Yizrach LaYashemesh. And by Chizkiyahu you have that the sun stayed 10 hours more in the sky than normal. Tosfos says those don't count because those were to make up a previous deficit. In the case of Yaakov, it set early when he came to Hara Maria so that he should stay the night over there. So now Hashem made up those extra hours for him later on after he had been attacked by the Malach. And the same with Chizkiyahu, when his father Ochaz died, Hashem made the sun set early so he wouldn't have a dignified Leviah because he was a Rosha. So now Hashem brought back those hours for Chizkiyahu. So therefore, those don't count because those are just making up missing time from before. As opposed to here, we're not talking about making up any missed time. We're talking about actually where we're talking about that's something new. Hakosef brings another point, also that by Chizkiyahu, at least, the sun went backwards. Here we're talking about the sun stayed in place. It didn't move forward or backward. So where do we know that happened by Moshe? Amar Rabbi Elazar, Asya Ochel Ochel. We learn Xeda Shava on the word Ochel. Hashem says by the battle with Sichon or with Oig, Hashem says, I will begin to make everybody fearful of you. By Yeshua, it says, Ochel Gadocha, I will begin to make you great in the eyes of all the nations. So therefore, just like by Yeshua, in a battle you had that the sun stood still, therefore by Moshe, and this is how we learn with the Yudgum and Midas are not just meant to learn halacha, we also learn them, we also use them to learn details of stories like this, Rashi explains. Omrib Shmuel Manachmeni, Omrib Yonasan, Asya Taste. You have another Zeta Shabbat from the word taste. Ksivacha taste. Here Hashem says, Hayom Azeh, Ochel taste Pachtacha V'yirascha. I will begin to place your fear and your trembling over everybody. Ochtivasim begin taste Hashem as Amorim v'gamer. There by Yeshua it says on the day that Hashem gave over the Amorim into the hands of the Jewish people. Rabbi Yochanan Amar asked him go for the Torah. Rabbi Yochanan says you don't need any of these Zera Shavas. You can learn it from the Pasuk itself, where Hashem continues telling Moshe by this battle with Sichon or with Oig, Asher Yishmo and Shimacha, that everybody will hear of your report, the rogs will call them Miponecha, and they will tremble and they will be afraid in your presence. Amosai, the rogs of Acholim Miponecha, when are they going to be afraid and trembling in Moshe's presence? And especially, Marsha explains in the Masechta Avodah Zarah, where this Gemara also is, that Marsha explains, if they're already afraid of Shimacha, when they only hear of Moshe second or third hand, why do we even need to mention that they're going to be afraid when they see Moshe? It means Vashash Nikhtama Chamala Moshe, when the sun stood still for Moshe, so anybody who heard about it was already overawed by it. And then, if anybody actually had the opportunity to see Moshe in person, all the more so they were terrified of him. So therefore we see that there was something where even when they heard far away, it would cause them to tremble in fear of Moshe, and that was that Hashem made the sun stand still for him. Yom Yom Mashiach Ha'Gola. What is today? Yud Zayin Sifin. Thank you. Okay. La'asid Lavoi. So La'asid Lavoi. All the nations will come to Mashiach. The Rebbe talks about there's something in a minder from the Friedrich Rebbe. The fact that all the goyim were bottled to Shloima, and that's why in his times it was shot and the Nocha and Shalom, means really they were bottled to the Gilui, to the revelation of Odin Soif that was shown in the world through Shloima. And in the same vein, you have the fact that the Pasuk says that people came from all the different nations to hear his Chochmah is also the real reason is not so much because they were impressed by his Chochmah, but because they were drawn to Elikus. As we find by Mashiach, who's going to be a descendant of Shloima, where the Pasuk says, V'naharu Elov kol ha-goyim. All the goyim will stream towards him. The word V'naharu actually has a double meaning. It means Melosh Nohar. They'll come to him like a flowing river. And also V'nahar, also Nohar is Aramaic, like Nahoda in Aramaic, means light. They'll all be drawn to his light. So meaning, the real thing is, the fact that they're going to be drawn to him is that they're really drawn to the other course that he's going to bring into the world. Continuing with halachas, we've talked about the definition of Rishus HaYachid and of Rishus HaRabim. And by the way, he hadn't, the last point the kids of Shulchan Aruch had mentioned about a Rosh Hasharabim is that Yesh Omrim, that there aren't 600,000 people passing through it every day. It's not a Rosh Hasharabim. So, and he says, Bizman Azeh, we don't have a Rosh Hasharabim, but in that case, that doesn't necessarily apply in large cities like New York. Ad Kedekach, even I've talked to various Rabbonim on that topic, and they say, so I asked, for example, what about, fine, maybe let's say Eastern Parkway can easily have 600,000 people passing through it every day. What about, let's say, Montgomery Street? What about, let's say, what about Sterling Street or whatever? But since they're all interconnected, then they all count. Therefore, if one of them is a Rosh Hasharabim, all of them count as a Rosh Hasharabim, and that results in why, as we know, as our Rabbonim have told us, that we don't have an Eruv in Crown Heights. For that reason, because all the streets are Rosh Hasharabim, and you can't make an Eruv in Rosh Hasharabim unless you can actually put up doors.